I'm Carson Stooley. With me is Fangraphs Managing Editor Dave Cameron, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. Yes, Dave Cameron, it is episode 15 of the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. I am Carson Stooley, as noted, and you are Dave Cameron, and you are there, I assume. Is that right?
I am here.
That's right. Dave Cameron is the he's present, and he's also the managing editor of Fangraphs.com. And together, what we do is form the Pitch Talk Blue Jays podcast, where we attempt to utilize the same sorts of objective analysis and data that characterizes much of the work of Fangraphs and apply it specifically to the Toronto Blue Jays. We do this at the pleasure of our patron, Home Stand Sports, not Homeland Sports, Home Stand Sports. And homestandsports.com, who, a group which facilitates the Pitch Talks events. Dave Cameron, would you like to explain to us what is a Pitch Talk event?
It is a gathering of baseball fans in a particular city who want to get together with writers, bloggers, broadcasters, sometimes team executives, those involved in and around the game of baseball in that city and sometimes nationally. To talk about the local team, how they're doing, how the season's gone, how the season has not gone, and drink adult beverages while either commiserating or celebrating the season at hand.
Okay, all right. And you do mention that it takes place in certain cities. The next city in which it will take place is, well, of course, this event is fast approaching. This is Monday, August 7th, 7 p.m. at the Bell House in Brooklyn, New York. It's an event that will feature a live podcast recording of Effectively Wild,
yeah,
which is a podcast hosted by Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer. He's also author of It Better Work, Guys. Is that right? It Better Work, Guys?
Very close. The Only Rule is It Has to Work.
The Only Rule is It Has to Work, which he wrote with Sam Miller. And then also Jeff Sullivan, a prolific contributor to Fangraphs.com. As I say, they will record a live edition of the Effectively Wild podcast. That will be in Brooklyn, New York on the 7th. You may or may not be in attendance. It is a mystery. Is that right?
I am potentially scheduled to be there, but family medical issues may prevent my attendance, so I am to be determined.
Sure. TBD Dave Cameron. TBD DC. But another Pitch Talks event that is approaching September 18th. September 18th, 7 p.m. September 18th, The Independent in San Francisco. An event that will feature a number of voices, including, for example, Grant Brisby. Grant Brisby's voice, at least. He is of the SB Nation blog and McCovey Chronicles. Bobby Evans, who, of course, is the GM of the San Francisco Giants. And the strangely coiffed Eno Saris, who, of course, writes for Fangraphs.com, in addition to writing about and consuming beer with some frequency.
I have a question about Grant Brisby. Did you know that he hosts a post-game show after every single Giants game?
No, I did not.
Yeah, so he hosts a show or co-hosts a show with Therese Fennell, who I think is also going to be at the at that event.
You're exactly right. Yeah.
So together they host a show called Giants Outsiders, which is a post-game recap on video on camera. So not only does Grant Brisby have to watch every single Giants game, which this year has not been an enjoyable experience, he then has to stay up after the game and talk about it for a while, including when they play like 5-hour extra inning games as they did this weekend. So come
like in studio.
Yeah, no, he sits in the studio, watches the game, and then has to talk about it on TV. Come ask Grant Brisby how much he has hated his life this season.
Yeah, that seems to, like, he was so late. Like, he's got a child, right?
He has a young child, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
if you're
late.
A Blue Jays fan, I'm assuming you're not enjoying the season. Imagine not only did you have to watch all of these games, but then when it ended, you had to spend another hour of your life reliving the pain that you just put yourself through.
Okay. Well, when it comes to reliving the pain, Dave Cameron, that is one of our responsibilities here on the Pitch Talk Blue Jays podcast. As you know, we begin every week, we begin our analysis, our objective analysis of the Toronto Blue Jays by looking at the week that has passed. And frequently this informs our how we will discuss the future. Okay. Since we last recorded it last Monday, July 17th, the Toronto Blue Jays played seven games, and of course, as we noted at the time, Dave Cameron, those seven games would have an outsized effect on the team's near future, because not only are we approaching the trade deadline, but those games were also against essentially the two best clubs in the American League, not that were not the Astros, the Boston Red Sox. Now, at Boston, Toronto actually did manage to take 2 of 4, which is good. But then they also play Cleveland, one of the best teams in the American League, and they lost all three.
Isn't really good when you're trying to catch the Red Sox. That's just standing still while running out of time.
Right. But 0-3 in Cleveland is worse than that.
Yeah. It's 2-5 on the week. Plus Aaron Sanchez had another blister problem, is back on the DL. Plus Josh Donaldson apparently has forgotten how to hit.
Right. And how did it happen?
What a swimming week.
Sometimes I'll do this too. I'll say, how did it happen? Well, if we look at the WAR leaderboards for the past week, we find that the Toronto Blue Jays, their position players recorded the lowest WAR figure for the week, -0.4.
That's bad.
Negative. Yeah. It did turn out well. Justin Smoke, the bright spot, nearly a win over the past week. Jose Bautista, a negative half a win all by himself. However.
Yeah.
Which is not so good. And on the pitching side of things, actually, do you know that the Toronto Blue Jays pitchers, as a group, recorded the third best WAR in the majors?
Huh.
So the pitching was not really the problem in this particular case, it appears.
Yeah.
And Marcus Stroman, 2 good starts. He only allowed he had a 0.63 ERA. So in 14 innings, I guess that would be 1 run probably.
Yeah. 1 run. Yeah. 1 earned run at least.
Yeah, Roberto Osuna quite good again. A number of the relief corps was quite good. Dominic Leone, Joe Biagini, et cetera. Good starts from everyone. Danny Barnes, whom you identified as one of the sneakiest picks of the trade deadline.
Yeah. Still pitches well. They should still trade him.
2 poor 2 innings. Okay.
Can I ask you a trivia question? Because sometimes you like to throw these things at me. I want to do it in reverse.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
Okay, if you had to guess, the Toronto Blue Jays, a slugging team known for their power hitters with Donaldson, Bautista, Morales, a breakout year from Justin Smoke,
mm-hmm.
How many teams do you think have scored fewer runs than the Toronto Blue Jays this year?
How many teams have scored fewer runs?
Fewer runs than the Blue Jays. They play
fewer
in a,
the Blue
they play
and I think
in
they're
an
park.
Offensive park. They have the DH.
Right, yeah, yeah. Now, of course, one thing I'm inclined to do, as I think understandably, is to I'm going to adjust for the very fact that you're asking me the question.
Right. This is selection bias. You are adjusting
right.
The selection bias. I wouldn't ask if they were seventh or something.
Right. So I'll say even using selection, even integrating selection bias into it, I'll say they have the 25th most runs. So 5 teams are worse.
You're close. 27th most teams. Do you want to know the 3 teams in baseball who have scored fewer runs than the Toronto Blue Jays this year?
Yeah, I do.
The San Francisco Giants,
yeah.
Who I believe Hunter Pence hasn't hit a home run at home all year, and they're in last place 30 games out of first place.
Mm-hmm.
The Philadelphia Phillies, who haven't been trying to win for years, and whose best hitter is, I don't know, Adubel Herrero, was a Rule 5 pick a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not trying to win. And the San Diego Padres, who are basically a Double-A team playing in a Major League park.
Right, and I think have what do they have, 3 or 4 Rule 5 players on their on their active roster?
I mean, literally the San Diego Padres probably don't have 1 player so the Blue Jays would stick in their everyday lineup at this point. Although, maybe they would, considering how the Blue Jays have played. But yeah, the Blue Jays have scored 401 runs this season. The Giants have scored 391 while in one of the worst parks for offense in baseball and without the DH. The Phillies are at 385, again, without the DH. Padres, 371 without major league hitters.
Right. So not, it's not great. Only room to improve, though, really. Well, not only room to improve.
Yeah, I mean,
mostly,
you could go down a little further, but yeah.
Mostly
if you were going to ask yourself, what is going to sink the Toronto Blue Jays in 2017, I don't think you would have said they're not going to score any more runs than the Giants or the Phillies or the Padres.
Yeah, certainly an unexpected outcome. Now, listen, Dave Cameron, a couple points to be made here. One is that much of our conversation over the past month, say, has been very much focused on the trade deadline, right?
Yep.
And what's going to happen at it. I think that we might both agree that it might be best to focus on a different topic besides that one, or to extend our reach into the future. Another point of fact is that I am about to become a father.
Yeah.
The due date for my wife, for her pregnancy, is in 2 days from now, and so it's very likely that we will not be recording next week. There will be no Insta commentary available on the trades the Blue Jays do or don't make at the deadline. And I think, so per your suggestion from our rigorous pre-show planning, Dave Cameron, well, why don't you say what we're going to do today?
I think it's time to look forward to 2018. You know, the Blue Jay season is effectively over. Like, there's some chance they could have a monster finish to the season and squeak back into the wild card race, but they're probably done at this point, especially if they sell off, you know, Joe Smith and Francisco Liriano and Marco Estrada over the next few weeks. They're probably done. So the question now, I think, is how good is this team next year? Because Mark Shapiro has talked about, you know, they're not willing to do a big blow-up. They want to just kind of retool, put this team back together next year and make another shot at it. But this is a team that, you know, is, what, 44 and 54, with older players and a bunch of holes. Is contending next year actually, like, a reality? Like, is this something that the Blue Jays are just kind of, like, wishing that they could contend? Or is this something that they actually can do? And if they can contend, how are they going to improve a team that's not very good right now into one that can keep up with the Red Sox and the Yankees next year?
Okay, so please answer the question. I mean, the team starts, I assume, you know, at some level with, I mean, who is in the core? Josh Donaldson's is part of that core.
He is, but he's only under control for one more year, so okay. Short-term core.
Right. Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Stroman are part of the core.
Yeah, Roberto Osuna, Justin Smoke has put himself into the core with a monster breakout season. But he's also under control for only one more year. The widely mocked 2-year contract extension they gave him turned out to be a really good thing, because now they get one more year of cheap Justin Smoke after he's had this big breakout season. Kevin Pillar is probably still part of the core, is a good defensive outfielder who hits enough to not be needing to be replaced. And, you know, that's probably your core. You're stuck with Troy Tulowitzki and Russell Martin because they're old and paid a lot of money, and so you couldn't give them away at this point. But, you know, not necessarily guys you're counting on as, like, huge producers. I don't know, Danny Barnes is a reliever, so, you know, an older rookie reliever, not someone you can necessarily count on going forward. Their core is really, at this point, Donaldson and Smoke for one more year, Sanchez, Stroman, and Osuna for a few more years after that.
Okay, right. And then in Bautista, his contract situation?
He's a free agent at the end of the year. They gave him a 3-year deal that included a couple of team options that are very clearly not going to be exercised at this point. The market rejected him last year when he had some underlying peripherals suggested that he might not be done, and now he's looked done for another year. I could see the Blue Jays maybe bringing him back for, like, you know, $5 or $6 million or something, but his days as an everyday player making significant money and being counted on to contribute at a high level to a contending team are probably over.
How does this compare? Now, we're pointing out a bunch of, you know, a team that has some real assets,
yeah,
and then is surrounded by, you know, maybe some replacement level fodder, reminds me a little bit of some of like the White Sox team from last year,
yeah,
before they traded Chris Sale, before they traded, you know, more recently Jose Quintana,
yeah,
and Adam Eaton was part of that as well. Is this a similar situation to the White Sox? Or do you think not quite as dire?
I think this is maybe not quite as dire in the sense of, like, you know, they've won with most of this group more recently, but maybe more dire in the sense of, like, they don't have the trade assets that the White Sox had. So you look at Donaldson, you know, a great player, but going to make, what, $20 to $25 million in arbitration this winter, and is a one-year rental, essentially, if they tried to trade him. You're not getting for Josh Donaldson what the Red Sox got or what the Red Sox gave up for Chris Sale. You're not getting for, you know, any of these guys what the White Sox got for Jose Quintana or Adam Eaton. They don't have that kind of, like, super high-value trade chip. You could argue that, like, you know, maybe Marcus Stroman is in the range of Jose Quintana, but they don't talk about it. They don't really want to trade him. But, you know, Stroman's their most valuable chip at this point. And so, you know, they essentially, if they want to replenish the farm system the way the White Sox have, would have to tear it down, start all over. And, you know, if you trade Donaldson, Stroman, Sanchez, Smoke, now you're the Phillies or the Padres or something. Like, you're a legitimately terrible team, stuck with some bad contracts, and, you know, you're not going to win anytime soon, which I think is not an appealing option for Shapiro or the rest of the front office, and they want to avoid that if possible. But realistically, if you're looking at it, like, you know, this is a team that gave 100 plate appearances to Luke Maley, who's, you know, who hit about as well as you and I did. There's a team that gave 250 plate appearances to Ryan Goins, who hit slightly better than you or I would have. You know, Kendrys Morales is an everyday DH, who's been below replacement level. Steve Pearce hasn't been any good, and no real reason to expect him to get a lot better. You know, like I said, we're basically stuck with Tulowitzki and Russ Martin. they could be maybe a little bit better next year than they were this year, but they're at the age where you wouldn't expect dramatic improvements. It's not really easy to look at this team and say, like, this is where they're going to get significantly better internally. Like, they need help from the outside. They need 5 or 6 new players, like, good, regular major league players. They have money coming off the books, especially if they don't re-sign Batista. Liriano and Estrada are free agents at the end of the year. But it's not that easy to just go get 5 or 6 good major league players in one offseason.
Right. And then what do we know about the team in terms of help from the farm?
It's not that close. I mean, they called up Anthony Alford. There was thought that he could potentially help them in the outfield, and then he got hurt, his second game in the big leagues or something like that. He could potentially be part of the solution next year. He was hitting well in Double-A. He's a good athlete. He's a guy you could look at and say, we're going to bring him to spring training next year and hope that, he's ready to help us. But at the same time, his minor league track record is a little bit spotty. He wasn't that good the year before in high A ball. He's going to be 23 next year, coming off a year where he played a few months, essentially, because he missed a good chunk of this season, so his development was a little bit arrested. I think in an ideal world, you'd like Alford to spend time in the minor leagues next year, maybe most of the season in the minor leagues next year. Rowdy Tellez, who looked like potentially a, first base DH option, has had a terrible year in AAA and doesn't look like a guy you can count on next year. Richard Urena doesn't look like he's ready to take over for Troy Tulowitzki, even if they could move Tulowitzki, which they can't. There doesn't seem to be a lot of guys you can look at in the minor leagues and be like, this guy is going to be on this team next year and he's going to be our Corey Seager.
Right. It seems as though, now, I would say, if I play the devil's advocate, that writing off Russell Martin and Troy Tulowitzki entirely might be a bad idea. They're certainly aging, but they've had such profound physical talents over the courses of their career that simply writing them off, might be the wrong way to go about it. I don't know. Do you think there's any credibility to that?
I don't think I'm writing them off. I guess I'm looking at it and saying, how much better can I expect them to produce next year than this year, right? Because that's what the Blue Jays need. They need significant improvement over what they had this year. Like, they can't just bring back the same core and be like, well, they'll be okay again and expect to win because there are some glaring holes. So you look at Russ Martin, he's been a league average hitter this year at age 34. Not a great player, but a league average hitter from a catcher is a nice thing, and he's a good defensive catcher. Do you expect him to be better than that at age 35? Probably not. So maybe he's a little healthier, and you don't have to give quite as many at-bats to Luke Maley, but in general, I don't think the Blue Jays can reasonably expect to get significantly more from Russ Martin next year than they did this year. Tulowitzki's put up a 79 WRC+. And his defense has been fine, and he's played half the season. Like, maybe you can look at it and be like, yeah, maybe he'll be a 90 WRC+ guy next year and play a little bit more, so you get, a half a win or a win there or something like that. But neither of these guys come with, they just had the worst year of their career, even though they're 4-1. This isn't like Andrew McCutchen last year, where a franchise player had a down year, and you can say, I think he's going to be good again. These guys are past their prime, physically beaten down, broken down guys who aren't going to be what they were a few years ago, and you're hoping for league average performance, and that's not going to carry the Blue Jays back to the postseason.
Can I ask a question? I mean, if we are looking ahead to next year, I believe I'm not mistaken in saying that Josh Donaldson signed an extension before the 2016 season, a 2-year extension to avoid arbitration, but that he actually is coming up on an arbitration date this offseason?
That's correct. So he basically sold his first and second arbitration years, but not his third arbitration year. So he's got one left.
So,
Or he sold his second and third because he was a Super 2, but he's got his fourth one coming up.
Right. But now, there's not a lot of precedent for players who have won an MVP award and gone into arbitration, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few. Ryan Howard basically broke records through arbitration before he got his monster extension because he won an MVP, went in his second year in the league or something like that, and then he had a couple of top 5 finishes. So there's a few of them. I think Bryce Harper, was going to be a potential MVP going into arbitration. He just signed a deal with the Nationals to kind of do the same thing. I think they paid him $20 million for his final arbitration year, or $21 million, something like that. There's not a lot of cases, but Donaldson's going in off a $17 million salary as a Super 2 guy. So this is his fourth trip through with really impressive numbers. Not great numbers this year. That'll actually hold his salary down a little bit, and the fact that he missed a lot of time. So his number could have been 25 to 30 million if he had had another Josh Donaldson type season. The fact that he's been hurt and hasn't played that well this year means it's probably more in the low 20s. But it's still going to be a significant number. He's going to clear 20 million.
Okay, and so that'll have the team. The team at that point will have almost certainly three players being paid $20 or more million between Donaldson, Martin, and Tulowitzki, it appears like.
Yeah, and you know, only one of those you can expect $20 million worth of production from.
So on the one hand, as you noted, Mark Shapiro says that he does not want to blow up the team. He's certainly not going to get rid of Donaldson or it seems like Marcus Stroman, for example, or Aaron Sanchez. But at the same time, you are asking some questions about what the team actually has to play next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I just look at this team and like I see the desire to win. I understand why with Donaldson's walk here. With Stroman and Sanchez, and Osuda, you would say, hey, I really want to, put a winning team around them. I wonder about the legitimacy of their ability to do so without some really good moves because, they don't really have a left fielder. So, there's a one weak spot you have to fill. You don't really have a right fielder. I think there's a decent chance they don't bring Jose Bautista back. And he hasn't been very good this year. So you need two corner outfielders, right? You don't really know what you're going to be able to get from Devin Travis, who's been injured again, and Ryan Goins has basically played himself out of the idea that he can be an effective replacement. So you probably need a second baseman, or at least a part-time second baseman, depending on what you think Travis is going to do next year. So that's 2.5 regular major league players. Now in your rotation, Sanchez's finger problems and constant, I'm disabled this for the third or fourth time this year, and hasn't been very good when he has pitched. Has opened up some questions about what he's going to be next year. So you have Marcus Stroman, Jay Happ, maybe Aaron Sanchez, and then nothing at the back of the rotation because you're losing Estrada and Liriano. So you need two major league starting pitchers. You're going to lose Joe Smith, who's a free agent, who's been a very good setup man for them this year. Potentially they might trade a guy like Barnes. They could trade Osuda. They probably won't, but they could. So you're going to have, at least one bullpen spot open. And then you need basically an entire new bench because one of the reasons you were terrible this year is your backup catchers were awful, your backup second baseman was awful, your backup shortstop was awful, you didn't have any outfield depth. So you basically need like three or four new bench players, 2.5 starting position players, two starting pitchers, and a reliever. And you are already kind of close to your payroll maximum. Like, it's not like you're going to have no money to spend, but to get that in free agency is unrealistic.
Okay. In terms, so obviously the Blue Jays can only control their own roster, but part of making the playoffs, the other half of the equation is the talent, the quality of the teams in a team's division, in a club's division. In this case, the Blue Jays division. What are they up against now, and especially next year as opposed to this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the Red Sox, they aren't going anywhere, right? Like the Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts and, now Rafael Devers, who's come up to the big leagues to hopefully fill that third base hole. Jackie Bradley Jr., like Dustin Pedroia, David Price. Like, the Red Sox are good. The Red Sox are going to be good. They still have Craig Kimbrell next year. Like, the Red Sox aren't going anywhere. They're going to be tough to overcome. The Yankees, I think, weren't a year early this year in contending and weren't expected to be that great till next year. But Aaron Judge has turned into a monster. They've added Clint Frazier, who looks like a good player next year. Aaron Hicks has turned into a guy that they can trust in the outfield. Brett Gardner is, I think, a free agent at the end of this year, so they're losing him, but they have the ability to replace him internally. And then you look at, Didi Gregorius has turned into a nice player. Starlin Castro has bounced back. They still have Gary Sanchez. Like, this is the core of a good young team. The Yankees need a few pitchers, too, but, they've got a really good bullpen for next year with Dellin Betances, Tommy Conley, David Robertson, and Aroldis Chapman. So the rotation doesn't have to be amazing. The Yankees have the ability to go sign Yu Darvish if they want to, because they're the Yankees, or they could potentially sign Shohei Ohtani because they're the Yankees. So with those two teams, I think you have legitimate obstacles to thinking that this is going to be a winnable division next year unless the Blue Jays make some real significant upgrades.
Right. Orioles, less of a problem, you think?
Yeah, the Orioles are bad, and they're going to be bad for a while.
Okay, and the Rays, of course, have serious constraints.
The Rays are the Rays, right? Every year they come in with a decent team with some good young players, and they'll hang around 500 and hope to be healthy, but maybe, not a team that you necessarily have to worry about, but also not one you can write off.
Okay. All right. What is the most optimistic viewpoint? What is the most optimistic outcome?
I mean, I think if you're Mark Shapiro and you're trying to talk yourself into, let's keep everyone together, you think Donaldson's going to bounce back and have an MVP year, you get way more out of him. Smoke hopefully sustains this breakout, which is probably not going to happen, but you can at least talk yourself into thinking it. You get a whole healthy year out of Aaron Sanchez. Stroman becomes an ace. you know, you've got like the five or six guys to build around, and you say, all I really need are some like reasonable role players. I just need to do a better job of kind of building up the depth. I need to find fewer Kendrys Moraleses and more, I don't know, think of a guy who's a good role player who's signed cheaply, Josh Reddick, right? Like Josh Reddick was a good player for the Astros this year, who's helped them, who signed for not that much more money than Morales. They would have been better off with Josh Reddick than Morales. So if they make a better decision there, you know, you can say, okay, I just need a few solid average major leaguers around the board, and then I've got these stars who can carry them. That's probably the optimistic scenario. As you can probably tell from this podcast, I'm not buying the optimistic scenario. If I'm Mark Shapiro, I would have taken a different tact at this trade deadline and probably said, reset.
Yeah. Hey, well, in terms of optimistic scenarios, Dave Cameron, let me take a moment to provide the prospect status update. The prospect, the mid-show, this is probably, we're two-thirds of the way through, maybe even three-quarters, the mid-show prospect status update, which, as you know, has mostly become the Danny Jansen status update.
Yes. I'm prepared to tune out as you talk about Danny Jansen.
Danny Jansen, you'll be interested to know, Dave Cameron, since we last spoke, recorded 20 plate appearances for AA New Hampshire. And now you did ask me a similar question a couple minutes ago. I'll ask you, how many strikeouts do you think prospect Danny Jansen or fringe prospect Danny Jansen recorded over those 20 plate appearances since we last spoke?
Because of selection bias, I'm going to go with zero.
Yeah, zero is the exact right answer. Yeah. Zero is the exact right answer. He did hit three doubles, though. In so doing, he recorded nearly a 160 ISO, isolated slugging mark, but zero strikeouts. Hey, that's good. I know what you're about to ask me now. It's like, man, Carson, Danny Jansen, it sounds like he's not striking out too much, huh? Yeah, that's exactly right. Of all the players across Double A, Dave Cameron, only one player has struck out less frequently, has recorded 150 plate appearances and struck out less frequently than Danny Jansen, and that is CJ Hinojosa, an infield prospect in the Giants system. Danny Jansen.
Anytime you can rank with CJ Hinojosa, you got to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, actually, he is actually pretty good. I'll tell you that he's become a. It's appeared on the Fringe Five, which is a weekly post I do for Fangraphs.com. But the point is, Danny Jansen. Now, what do we know about his receiving? Well,
he uses a glove.
Continues to get not particularly great reviews, and then the data from Baseball Perspectives do carry some framing data. Even for minor leaguers, we find that he's probably a few runs below average. What are teams willing to live with at this point in terms of receiving? And what are the Blue Jays specifically willing to live with in terms of receiving, do you think?
Not a lot, considering that they decided to play Luke Maley as their backup catcher just because he's a good receiver with good defensive abilities and hit 120 this year. You know, they had, Dionair Navarro, who was a better hitter and not as good a receiver, and decided, no, we would much rather have a guy who hits like a pitcher but at least can catch and throw and our pitchers like throwing to him. The bar for receiving in the major leagues has definitely been raised. There's no more Ryan Domets hanging around catching in the big leagues anymore.
All right. Yeah, well, that does not bode well for Danny Jansen, but everything else does in terms of his offensive contributions. He's 22 years old, playing very well for AA New Hampshire in the Eastern League. And that concludes the weekly Danny Jansen, the Danny Jansen status update.
That means I don't have to think about Danny Jansen for another month or so.
No, that's right. We probably will be taking about a month off. Let me tell you about the Toronto Blue Jays schedule over the course of the next week. Of course, a week from today at 5 p.m., that's July 31st, 5 or 4 p.m. Eastern maybe, that is when the non-waiver trade deadline will occur, what is frequently referred to simply as the trade deadline. We find, a couple full series, four games at home versus Oakland, and a team that's having some real troubles this year, evidenced perhaps by the fact that two of the four starters during that series, the probable starters, are Chris Smith, who I think made his first major league start recently what is his age 34 season? Might have been the second start of his career. No, sorry, age 36 season. A good story as far as that's concerned, but perhaps does not bode well for the A's. And also Paul Blackburn, something less than a household name. Paul Blackburn has also made a few starts and has recorded lower than a 10% strikeout rate over 25 innings.
I think he's the guy who the A's got for Danny Valencia.
From the Mariners?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, well, he was involved in a trade with the Mariners, so that would make sense. Some transfers, some wins in the near future at least, and then also at home against the Angels, where they are also, at least by FanGraphs odds, projected to do quite well. So it could be a profitable week. However, it might also be too little too late.
I think our game odds do not know that the Blue Jays are in the process of trying to trade away some of their better players.
Yeah, I was going to ask you this question, right? Is there any precedent? You said that, you know, it's going to be a lost season unless they go on a huge run. Yeah. If they have a monster second half, I think is how you phrased it. Is there any precedent for a team actually selling at the trade deadline and then somehow playing their way into contention anyway?
I feel like some team did this not too long ago, but they didn't make it all the way back. I don't think anyone actually made the postseason after selling, but I do think like there have been an example of a team like maybe moving some minor pieces and then immediately catching fire, but I can't recollect what team or what year.
So
basically I am no help to you whatsoever.
You're no help, well, except for the fact that we trust the fact that you are forced by your job to think about baseball quite a bit, and despite that, no ready examples come to mind.
Yeah,
so
it's not obvious to like say, oh yeah, that was the story of such and such a team.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So not a glowing endorsement of that. Although I suppose if a team were to sneak into the playoffs this year, doing it by way of the AL wild card would probably be one of the better chances, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just because there's only three good teams in the American League and five of them have to make the playoffs. So two mediocre American League teams will make the postseason. Just probably won't be the Blue Jays.
Right, and one of them will make the divisional series.
Right, because one of those teams has to win the wild card game. So.
Yeah, right.
Some not great team is going to find themselves with a, you know, not 1-8, but like maybe 1-10 or 1-11 chance of winning the World Series.
Yeah, all right. Hey, well, Dave Cameron, I believe that if as long as you agree that we've probably reached the end of this edition and probably the last edition for about a month of the Pitch Talk, Pitch Talk's Blue Jays podcast. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I wish you well in becoming a father and trying not to kill your son.
Yeah, I look forward to that too. I get arrested for doing that. Okay, well, let's stop it then. I will say thank you, Dave Cameron.
You're welcome.
Okay, that has been Dave Cameron. He's the managing editor of Fangraphs.com. I'm Carson Sestouli, and this has been the Pitch Talk's Blue Jays podcast.